Episode 139 of Board Games with Variant Hex is all about what we played in the month of February. I'm Kelly, and in this episode, Aaron and I talk about what we're bringing back to the table, what we'd get rid of, and what we picked for Game of the Month. This month flew by for us, but we were able to do a lot of our small box games, even though we didn't have a lot of time to play. Without further ado, I'll turn it over to myself and Aaron talking about what we played in February.
I think BR is an interesting set of consecutive consonants.
Can't believe that you started this podcast with that, which is the statement you made just before you hit record. It's been a long time since we recorded anything.
Yeah.
It's been a full month and a slightly longer February than usual.
Or is it leap day? February.
Oh, I thought you were just talking about word puzzles.
No, I think it's just an interesting way to spell the month. I always think of it fondly when I think of the month, and I thought I'd
know. I don't think I'm actually pronouncing the R.
I don't think you're supposed to. I think it's February.
February. No, I don't think I am.
You're not supposed to pronounce the R. It's just in there.
Okay. Anyways, this is the month in review. We almost, I mean, there's a version of February where we play like three games.
We played a lot of games in the last 3 days.
And that was a strategic decision. I'm going to go ahead and take all the credit for that.
Yep.
To play a lot of our small games. Yeah. And then I also played some solo small games on top of that so that we would have a reasonable list to make reasonable progress through our collection. However, that means if you do all the little tasks, the little easy stuff, and then all you're left with is like the big long games that we talk about getting to and never do. So, but it was a super busy month. We had renovations that we were doing in our house. So preparing for that, and really, while the renovation area has been cleaned, the auxiliary areas still very much say renovation all over them.
Yeah, but we're getting there.
Yeah, but we got furniture back in the room. We're using the rooms again. We're parked in the garage, but everything else, a little iffy. So it is nice, though. I think that's always what's nice about a hobby like board gaming and making the time for it is that, yes, we had been busy with all that stuff. Taking time out to play, make sure we play some games is also taking time out, you know, like self-care and a rest and kind of having some balance, because you can definitely push yourself to extremes once a project starts. I know that you were super busy with work before we did that project. I've been busier than I care to be after it. And very soon we're going to be headed to Dice Tower West, which we'll talk about a little more at the end of this podcast. So that's the context for our month in review. I played 23 games, 26 total plays. You had 19?
Yeah, 19.
19 different games, 22 plays?
Well, I had 22 plays, 19 games. Yeah.
So the games that were played were Bandada, Chomp, Circle of Wagons, Dandelions, Freelancers, a Crossroads game, French Quarter, Hanami Koji, Happy City, Herbaceous, High Risk, Infiltrators, Kabuto Sumo, King Domino, King Domino Duel, Level 10, Love Letter, Point City, Rolling Japan, The Shipwreck Arcana, Sky Team, Steam Up, A Feast of Dim Sum, Sunny Day Sardines, and Town 66. The most played game was Sky Team. We've been playing that. We have the physical copy. We've been playing it on BGA as like a quick game while we wait, but it's not that quick.
And we lose all the time.
And we lose constantly. We're not good at it. We're not getting any better. I mean,
we did win the last hand.
We're getting a little better, but we're still like on the easy one. And there's an element of luck in Sky Team. There's some luck, but at the easy setting, it's clear that we don't have the appropriate strategies.
I think also one time we were going to win, and then you misunderstood the breaking rule on the last go and had the right die to win, but played the wrong die, and then it was like an instant loss and we couldn't recover.
Our history with that game will show there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
There's a lot of being like, we could have not crashed this die. We could have not crashed. But we did. And if you're playing a physical game, I think I don't realize how much I probably do that. Like start to do something and say, oh, wait, no, that's not right. With BGA, you click it. It has happened. It is done. And for Sky Team, and I think a lot of other cooperative games, unlike a competitive game where you're just like, oops, maybe I'll make those points back. Cooperative games is like, no, everyone lost now. You made a mistake. And everyone's done.
The game we won, we were in a setting where we really couldn't talk out loud, even during the times when you were allowed to collaborate. And I don't know what it says about us that we won the game that we basically didn't plan together. I don't recall. I just remember noting that we were going to not talk that
anyway.
Much.
Weird. Okay, just going to leave that as a mystery. Yes, yeah, Sky Team was what we played the most. And then I played, technically, I played Town 66 solo a bunch of times in a row, like kind of relearning the rules and then kind of messing some stuff up and then playing it a few times out of curiosity as to how lucky is the game versus how much is it? Kind of a strategic skill thing. I didn't come up with any answer, but I also didn't log all of those plays.
Right, right.
On one hand, it's like, well, if you're going to log any plays, log all of them, because otherwise, what are you doing? But also, there was a freedom in just messing around with the game and not feeling like I had to get the stats out of it.
That's
it
the freedom I experience every time I play a game.
That's completely accurate. And yet, here we are in this lovely Month in Review podcast. The games were added to the collection, and barely. Any other year, they would have been March games added to the collection. Because we went on Leap Day, sort of as a, we've both seen 30 Rock. And if you watch your way through 30 Rock, they create the holiday of Leap Day, which doesn't really exist. But they act like it does, act like it has colors and all of this lore around it. They have a Jim Carrey movie, Jim Carrey cameos in the episode, going through this fake movie of Leap Dave Williams. Anyways, one of the things for in that lore is that you just do something unexpected on Leap Day because it's this extra day you're given. So it's sort of like a seize the day sort of thing. I ended up just mostly working and working longer than I usually do. So not exactly the day seizing I would like. No. I wasn't going for a Jack Donaghy.
Real life is for March is among the slogans. But yes. Real life, it seemed like real life was for February 29th.
It sure was. But right there at the last half hour of the game store being open, we got there and our local game store, you can have like a loyalty account and accrue points. And as you accrue points, you can then use those as a discount off of games. And I'd been saving them up. Every time we went in there, they'd be like, you want to use your points? I'd be like, no. So we had a good amount of points. And I thought, well, that would be a great Leap Day thing to do. Just go buy something, use the points. Was very close to getting a Lacerda game.
They had
pretty much one of each. So that was, if they'd only had one, it might have been more likely because I wouldn't have had to also make a decision about which one. But they had like six or seven. I don't even know how many there are. And so instead, we got Carvey, which is a Viking-themed game, but it's not so much about the battle part.
There's some battle, but it's not battle-centric.
Yeah, I punched it out today, and it's like a no plastic. Now, there's plastic wrapped around the box. So there's that. But the inside had no plastic in it.
Oh,
so
nice.
Everything came paper bags. There were cardboard boxes that you folded to house the components. So it didn't even come with plastic bags to then put the components in. And yeah, little cardboard chips that you put together. So really nice. And also got Soulless Lost, which is a solo card game. Both of these games I'd heard nothing about. I don't watch maybe as much board game media as I used to, especially when I've been busy at work. I'd heard nothing about either one of these. So that was another kind of level to the just going out there, using the points, getting something I hadn't heard of. And I did play Soulless Lost, but it was technically March. I liked it. It's in the same kind of vein as I have Lux Eterna, which is another like solo game. Warp's Edge is a solo game that you're kind of like space survival. All three of those are like space survival solo games. So it definitely feels in that same vibe. This one's certainly the easiest. Lux Eterna, I always just kind of make my own easy mode. You're supposed to play it timed, and I just refuse to. So this is probably the easiest to get going. Didn't love the rule book. I had to have Aaron help me.
Yeah.
And you helped me with the rule book.
I'm only 70% confident I told you the right answer, but I did tell you a playable thing that makes sense.
Yeah, and then once you're, you know, once you're playing, what's it matter? So what games were sold? We still have the gigantic culling shelf. We have not done anything about it.
We could put the culling sheet in the show notes.
I could. I think I need to update it. And I think I'm going to, okay, but I've talked about that before and we'll at some point when I do something about it, we will have a culling episode. It did not happen in February. So we have a metal shelf by our door that just has all of the games on it. And now it's becoming, when people come over, it's like, would you like a free game from the free game shelf?
Yeah, it's
please
pretty fun.
Please take something with you. So in that way, Adam came and he helped with our renovation and took Cryptid, Urban Legends, Watergate, and Half-Truth.
Nice.
So a couple two-player games, and then he's more of a party game kind of person. I don't think any of those games were bad, but we also thought that he might get more use out of them. We wanted him to try them, if nothing else. He took those, and then our other friends came over with their kids, and they were kind of, I told them, like, well, this is the free game shelf, and the kids were like, great. And then we're pulling all kinds of stuff off and seeing different things. And they had seen Princess Bride. So I Hate to Kill You was one of the games on there, which is a little dice battler game for two people. And they're a family with two kids. So the two kids could play that together. So they took that one with them. A few things came off the shelf and also just kind of got shared and passed along to friends. So they're not as fully out of our lives as some of the other games, but also, you know, not forcing the games on people. So I'm not like, here, take this thing that I don't think you'll play. I think what's nice about that is they'll both play it and then we'll kind of still be tangentially close to those games as well. Where and with who did we play games? At the coffee shop and at home, half the games we played at home. And the other half we probably did play just out and about.
Yeah. Still don't know where we played Sky Team at that one time.
No, because I don't put literally every place we are. So if we are not like at one of the normal coffee shops, it's just logged as out. So it could be anywhere. We mostly played on Saturday, but there were games played every day of the week, even though it was a very slim amount of games that we played. We mostly played games with one another. I played some solo stuff. And then we played Freelancers, a crossroad game with Jason. And that was kind of earlier in the month. And then I didn't play any games with our friends' kids that came over, but they were just pulling out games and like, what's this one like? What's this one like? So I kind of talked to them through how the different games worked for a bunch of stuff. So I wouldn't call that, we certainly didn't play them, but kind of went through a lot of games with them. Oh, yeah, because when I was doing that, they asked, why do you have so many games you're getting rid of? And I kind of like looked around the room and I'm like, well, you see, there's still a lot of games here not on that shelf. So you just have to be realistic about your time. And I have a pretty good knowledge of what is and is not on the shelf. So one of them brought me a game that wasn't on the free shelf. And I told him about it. I'm like, that's not on the free shelf. So you're gonna need to put that one back.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that is the month in review. Now we're getting to our selections for the month, including the Back to the Table, the Call Action, and the Game of the Month. So first up, Back to the Table. What game would we like to play more? The game that I'd like to play more is Infiltrators.
That makes sense.
It's just good every time. And I'm not the kind of person that, like, I don't really do favorites in the collection in the sense of like, oh, if I had to keep only 10 games, these are my 10 favorite games I keep. But I made that remark to you or something similar to that after we played it, which is just like, it's good every time. It's like a flow state of effort and enjoyability. It's co-op, but the other person absolutely can't like play your turn for you, which can sometimes be a problem in co-op. You still have your own things you're doing, your own decisions you're making. You're still weighing out how many cards is it good for the group for you to collect or not. You usually have the option to take some risks if you need to, but at the same time, you don't need to take any risks. You don't shouldn't take those on just for no reason. And we're still pretty early in the mission book. You could take any one mission and just play it endlessly and call it a game. As far as I understand it, the missions will be of escalating difficulty. So I'd like to get through those, see what some of the different ones are, some of the harder ones are. There's you usually just play with four colors and numbers 2 to 15. It's a card game. And you have these suspects that you're trying to deduce what the other players, because you can play with more. It's not just a two-player game. I think it's right. Like 2 to 4, maybe 5. You're trying to deduce what suspect the other players have. And I guess it's sort of like you're collecting clues about them or collecting, I don't know. It's kind of loosely themed because you could trip it all away and it's just this number deduction game.
Yeah. Numbers and multiples and fun stuff.
But the theming and the art is really good still. It's very consistent. It's still really fun. So yeah, it's just the right level of effort to be engaging, but not so much to be overbearing. And you can have something to think about while you play, but still play it pretty casually. I'd like to play it more, see what the other missions are like.
We've enjoyed it. I imagine that it's possible that you'll like it less when the difficulty gets to the point where you have to make more guesses. Because risky
decisions, yeah.
And I think you don't like risky decisions in games, but specifically you don't like being on my team when I feel like I get to make risky decisions.
Because you'll take all the risky decisions and it has to be somewhat balanced.
It's calculated risk.
It's
and sometimes it doesn't work out. You know, it's fine. Calculated risk is part of the thing.
That will be a big disappointment if we get to the end of it and I was like, oh, so I really will only tolerate the first 5 missions playing with
you. But also, maybe I can just take into consideration that you would rather lose than me take a calculated risk and I can just play that way.
I mean, you say that now, but somehow
I'm probably going to take the risk.
We find ourselves, yeah. Okay, so what is your Back to the Table game?
It's actually, If we recorded this podcast 10 days in a row, I probably wouldn't have picked this game. But I was just thinking, my back to the table is the stupidest game we played during this month. But we played
stupidest.
I won the first 4 points out of the four available points. When it was over, I wanted to play more. And I was like, oh, well, that was dumb and over. So Love Letter is my back to the table. It's a stupid game. But and then we played it, and it was just over so quickly, and I was like, you know what? It is kind of dumb and fun.
Because you can't get too invested in it because of how quick it is, I think. And especially two players, the way that Love Letter works, you have these 7 or 8 cards, different types of cards. It's a very small deck, maybe 15, 20-some cards in the deck. You only ever have 2 cards in your hand. Every card has a different kind of method or way or rule about it, how you play it.
Yeah.
So like one of them will let you see a card from the other person's hand. One of them being the princess or the prince, depending on the version you're playing with and the options you choose, you can't get them out of your hand. So then once you have them in your hand, you have to play your other card. And then sometimes it's like if the other card, it'll be saying something about the other card in your hand in ways it'll just like force you to lose.
Right. Like, so just, well, there's one card that, you, like, the first part of your turn you draw, and there's one card that if you, there's, like, half the deck you draw, you just automatically lose if you have that card in your hand.
If the combination of the two numbers on your cards is over a certain amount.
Yeah, and it's already a high number. So
it's a high-ish number. So, yeah, and then if you have the prince or princess, you can't get rid of that either. So the story of the game is that you're trying to get this love letter to the prince or princess, which is why you can't discard it, because that's sort of showing how far you got your letter. The cards in your hand, because they sort of go up in rank as they would in a court setting.
Just tell you how many times I could play that game and not imagine that there's a theme, actually.
There is technically a theme, and I know there are lots of different versions of Love Letter. They kind of went through a phase where they made a bunch of different versions. I don't think they're especially easy to find now. Haven't looked myself. And I think it's possible that those different versions may have variations within them. We have the Kanai Factory Edition
one,
which I think gives you the prince and the princess and gives you a few different ones. You get a princess with glasses, princess without glasses, and a prince. So yeah, it's very light and fun. If you're playing with more people, there's a little more of a deduction thing happening that's not, it's not like Coup. But also, if you've been listening to this explanation, you might be like, so it's kind of like Coup.
Yeah, it's...
And that would be fair enough.
It's not as good. I think it's...
The deduction isn't as strong because of how easy it is to find yourself into a forced loss. That's what Adam hates about it, because we played it and he just drew cards and lost immediately. And he's like, what is this? How is this a game? But I think it is, because when we were reviewing the list, I was looking at that too. It's not really the kind of game, it'd be fine to also be doing something else, to also be like catching up. You're kind of like eating a meal, you're catching up with friends. It's not going to take so much of your focus and energy it's, you know what I mean?
It's like playing center, left, right with pennies on the table while you're catching up with friends.
I have never done that, but I'm going to take your word for it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think we were talking, I don't remember if it was on a podcast, but recently we were talking about how you really don't like high luck, high variance games. And Love Letter is exactly a high luck, high variance game, but it's so dumb you can't possibly care.
It's the length of it. If I am in a long... high luck, high variance game, I don't really care for it. And I used to think like, oh, I really like lucky games. But when it's become such a landslide, it sort of feels like somehow that feels worse.
Yeah, it's really got me down.
Yeah. So that's back to the table. Moving on to collection, what game might not stay? We both know that I don't really care for Hanami Koji. That said, we have 2 versions of that game. We have Hanami Koji. And we have, I think it's called Jixia Academy, which is just the same thing, but with dudes.
Oh, right.
So, like, I definitely don't need 2 different copies of it. But that aside, because I know that there are certain games that every time we play them, they will always be sort of my collection games. Like, yeah, I don't really... I won Hanami Koji this time, and I'm like, cool, neat, fun, whatever. But the actual games that I'm picking, and I'm kind of deciding between 2, and they might just both pop over there to that shelf, is Rolling Japan and Town 66. Town 66 is an oink game. it's fine. As I mentioned, I technically played it quite a few times solo, and I think it is, for me, I think it doesn't really go beyond fine. Like, it was good and fun or whatever, and maybe it was also that we played so many light games together that it kind of made me say, well, this isn't even my favorite of the light games.
Right, right.
You think like, oh, well, it's a good light game. It's fine for what it is. But playing it back to back with things that were so similar to it, I think that kind of made me like it less. And then Rolling Japan, I don't know that I've ever really liked that much. I paid more for it than I ever should have. I got a used copy because I'd heard about it somewhere. I was able to find a used copy. The used copy was kind of expensive. The game is fine. You have a little, it's a roll and write. You have a little map of very abstracted Japan, which is just some boxes and different segments of colors. And every time you write a number in a box, the numbers in the adjacent box have to be within one of that number. So you kind of find yourself in a logical spatial hell, I guess. If you put certain numbers in certain places, you make it impossible to put anything in the numbers around them.
Right.
So you could unintentionally push yourself into a pretty significant failure. Now, there is some mitigation you can do. There's I think five colors on the map. Maybe there's six. There's one color that's not there. It's like a wild color. So when you get that dice, you can fill it in anywhere. You also have three opportunities throughout the game to change the color of the dice, so that also helps you. It's just not, it's fine, but it's just not great. And I think, again, in comparison with other light games, other dice games, it doesn't quite hit the mark for me.
Yeah. I didn't play either of those games, so.
No, you did. I mean, you played Hanami Koji, but yeah, that one wasn't, that's not real. We know that's staying.
No, that's definitely among my favorite games, even if we just skip one, it's fine. So for me, this is a game that I think is probably on my call list because I just don't think it's ever going to be good two players. I basically never had fun playing Kabuto Sumo.
Oh!
And I want it to be fun. It looks so fun.
Here's the thing. There was a Kickstarter for a different type of Kabuto Sumo that I did back. I know.
Because, we don't even like the first one.
But what I think about the first one is it's not great at two players.
Right.
And this other one, the arena is a different shape. It's a square instead of a circle.
Oh, that could be interesting.
And I think that might make it better.
The circle is, I mean, the first couple times we played, I was much maligned for taking a very liberal angle into the platform.
Yes.
And so we stopped doing that. And yes. Then now it's just not very fun. This time you lost because you ran out of pieces, but it was very lucky how many pieces I got at the start. And, you know, it's just, it's not that fun.
We played without the little extra bugs, like without the individual player powers. And I don't think that's a good idea either. I think maybe especially in two player, you could almost play with two of them just to force more things to happen because there's only so many pieces. And then just the way that works, it is definitely possible that just as a little bit of spatial luck, one person gets a landslide of pieces.
Yeah.
And there's like, you can kind of hang on and maybe be able to get their bug out of this, like maybe, but chances are you're just slowly waiting until you run out of pieces and eventually lose. So yeah, I think it is understandable for you to say that. It's a little more of a toy than a game.
Oh, fair enough.
And I think that's part of the charm that has me keep it because I do, I did not pull it out when our friends and their kids
game
were here.
To pull out.
Yeah, and it's, you know, if they had liked it, I might have ended up giving it to them, like in the big picture of things. It is a good game that is not a lot of rules. You can kind of pull out and play with people who are fundamentally not interested in games because it is a little bit more of a toy. Because it's a push puzzle. You have a little platform that's cardboard. You have wooden discs that are really nicely made.
It's a very nice.
It's not a very expensive game for having like the nice components in it. And I think we have a bonus pack of the special power kind of bugs that give you weird shapes that you can push in at different times or kind of they have special rules about them. So it's really nicely produced game. And yeah, more like a toy. I agree with you, even though I didn't pick it.
Yeah. So what is your game of the month?
So I had my doubts about this game in general and then also picking it for game of the month. But I decided to go ahead and pick French Quarter.
Oh.
This is the fourth game in a series from the same designers and publisher. I don't know if Fleet the Dice Game was the same publisher, but Fleet the Dice Game Three Sisters, Motor City, and then French Quarter. I've talked about it a little bit last month because I think the game actually came in last month. And before it came, I was sort of like, am I buying it just to be buying it? Like, will I actually like it or not? In fact, it has something in common with Rolling Japan and the way the game is played, in that you have two sheets. There's a lot of things going on because they're roll and write games that have these two sheets. Each of these sheets have different sections on them, and those sections have triggers for other sections. And it's usually just check boxes with rules. In Three Sisters, you have like these different plants you're growing and then these other parts of your farm that you're filling out as checkboxes. Motor City is a little different, and there's like tracks. It's still ultimately checkboxes. For French Quarter, you have your regular checkboxes, track of checkboxes. But then you also have this like grid of buildings that's meant to represent New Orleans. I don't know how literally the streets actually do line up with the streets of New Orleans. And all of the buildings have an empty box on that you write numbers in, but you can only write adjacent numbers that are within plus or minus one, the same way you kind of can with Rolling Japan. Now, even that, like, I think that maybe pushes it like fundamentally to being the more difficult of the games. I don't know, Motor City was, there was a lot going on there. But it's not unforgiving, because if you can't write a number in the box, because, you know, you have a five and then a space, an empty building, and then a two. Well, you can't write any number in between those buildings.
Right.
There's a track on one of your sheets that allows you to write in a letter instead, which kind of lets you bypass that restriction. And then also, if you happen to visit this location, because you have a pawn where you actually have to move around and visit things on your roll and write sheet. So it's also kind of stretching. There's decks of cards that are determining the actions. Like, it's stretching outside of just a roll and write game, or like more things keep getting added to it. There was a board added to Three Sisters that had actions on it. Motor City, that board got a little more complex. Now there's these decks of cards that have different actions on them that are kind of changing, and the values on those are changing. That same mechanic between two of them, I think, for Rolling Japan also made me think like, oh, maybe I could just get rid of Rolling Japan, because that same element, that kind of element of the spatial puzzle of trying to get these the right things next to each other at the right time, is now in this other game, and it offers a lot more. And I think I do like it more. I've only played it once. I think I like it more than Motor City. I don't know that I like it more than Three Sisters. It's pretty close to Fleet the Dice game for me, I think. But that's just after one play. I did not do all the things. For me, anyway, on those roll and write games with two sheets, it's unlikely I'm going to actually get everything right the first time I play Theory. I got to the end, I'm like, oh, wait, I should have been putting checkboxes here when I did this thing.
Yeah.
And I thought that the umbrellas, there are these umbrella icons that you can earn different places throughout the sheets, and they get you free actions, which is something that you see in the other games as well. And I was like, okay, well, I'm definitely going to try to get a bunch of free actions. And that was nice and everything. But if I had really been doing all of the tracks correctly, then I would have ran out of even the ability to get more umbrellas. And I don't remember if there's a condition in the rule book for if you get umbrellas and you've already finished your umbrella track, it might just be that nothing happens. You might get something, but it also might be that just nothing happens.
Yeah.
So trying to keep that balance in games like that of getting the most of something, but also not getting too much of it. Because if you get to the end of a track, you don't have anything to fill in. It's sort of a lost resource that you've accumulated. So you want to balance everything out, but then also there's some things you want to maximize, and kind of what can you ignore and how can you get points. So even with playing it, maybe not quite right, I got a decent amount of points. So I'm interested to play it again. In some ways, that's the back to the table, I suppose. But I think because it did exceed my expectations, and I realized I'm really, if I think of it as a standalone game, not just as a comparison to their other things in its series.
Right.
That was another place where I was kind of getting caught. And I was like, you know, I think it was one of the better games, but it's also one of the longer games. So maybe I just ultimately favor a game that's a little bit longer, since we played so many short games.
Short games, yeah. I think, yeah, it's tough. But also, I think if we go back, I don't have the records, but it wouldn't surprise me if Motor City Games basically have a clean sweep of taking your game of the month that you play their game the first time. Three Sisters probably for sure was your game of the month, or at least a back
to the
table.
Well, but that's the thing is, I guess technically have the data. It would be a little bit of matching to get it sorted. I don't always play it that much the month that I get it. So I don't think that Three Sisters became a favorite of mine until it was the solo game on Ruel's Discord.
Oh, right.
And I played it like a bunch of times in 2 weeks and sort of figured it out. And what I figured out that I thought like, oh, there must be one way to do this. What I learned was how balanced the game was, because I was able to do different things and still find new pathways to, again, a respectable score.
Right.
As long as you were balancing the right things the right way, you still were able to, you know, max out on a different track and then still be able to get this. If you sacrifice the right thing and max out on the right thing, you can still keep your scales level and get your score to where it needs to be. So that's kind of what I found out. And that was after repeat play.
Right.
So I think that made me like them more. And that would have been before Motor City came out. I've played Three Sisters the most. I have not played Motor City maybe twice. And then I've played Fleet the Dice Game probably 3 or 4 times, if I'm guessing.
So for my game of the month.
Yes.
I almost picked a short game, but I also, like you, picked a game that just took a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a ton of fun playing Freelancers, a Crossroads game with Jason.
You know, I'm glad that you picked it, because I think it's not really my kind of game.
Right.
Definitely has its foot in tabletop RPG
mm-hmm.
more than it does in board game. And so it's an entirely different, like, energy and vibe.
But it's
playing that game.
Pretty low key compared to some of those things. And I like the story. Oh. It didn't take forever.
And I exactly meant the vibe was more relaxed and low key.
Yeah.
Where you feel like you could order up a bunch of food or make a bunch of food. Everyone brings over food.
I think that's what we did.
You kind of like hang out. It's more of like a hangout, relaxing, because in a lot of the tabletop RPGs, someone has to run it.
Right.
I know it's not probably always true. For this Freelancers Across Roads game is very similar, as far as I understand, to Forgotten Waters, where there is a lot of voice acting and narration.
Yeah.
So they're like telling you the story.
Yeah. And I thought the voice acting was, I mean, I expected it to be worse.
Oh, really?
Like, it wasn't, I mean, I don't know if there was anything to write home about, but like there was a lot of voice content for the game we played. And we just played one of the stories, right?
I might write home about it.
Yeah.
I thought that part of it was really well done. We had a laptop up. I don't know how well it would work, like on a phone versus a laptop,
right,
that kind of thing. We had a laptop up. It kind of suggests like, have one person do this, have one person do that. And you don't really need to read anything to get started, even though there is a textbook for you to reference. Like, there's a rule book and guides for you to reference if you need to. But you can kind of just hit the ground running and just start playing through the story and the adventure.
And I thought it posed tough decisions without being too punishing. Because we didn't always have a clear path to victory. It looked like we were going to lose. We ended up winning by a very narrow margin.
Did we win?
Yeah, we got the luck we needed at the very end. We had a kind of a rough start and had a couple rolls go the wrong way.
I mean, that's great.
You logged it.
I did.
So you would
log
see if we
it.
Won. I mean, maybe I just remember it so positively that I was like, oh, we're all winners, but I think we won the game.
Oh, no, we definitely won.
Yeah. See?
Yeah. I guess I really mentally just accepted the loss.
I mean, it was early. Tough, but I think we had some really bad luck. So it might have it looked a little more punishing to us, but I also acknowledge, like, I know
wasn't there something that we didn't do right?
I don't think that
in the final boss.
Oh, I think we might have given ourselves a buff against the final boss, like by one die roll.
Yeah.
Like I think there was a plus one modifier to it that we just ignored.
I also think that it doesn't matter too much in a game like that. And I think that's for cooperative games in general, but maybe even more so ones that are really focused on storytelling, that it matters more that you all got together and enjoyed this story together. And we didn't get like too deep into role playing. It kind of gives you these different types of characters, gives you a few options that are more like,
I lost myself for 2 hours. I don't know what you're talking about.
In your character.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Do you remember your character's name?
I don't either.
I know. I think whatever it was some kind of pirate. And I was just like, because I was reading out the different options to you guys to pick them. And I'm like, well, I'm the pirate.
I think I was like a sage philosopher or something like that.
Yeah, I don't remember. And there was a little bit of a Mad Libs element to your story.
Yeah,
where
it was pretty fun.
You fill out a couple words and then you'll end up using those words in different little special snippets of story that you'll give. So it kind of creates this very irreverent backstory that pulls your characters together, like gives them a little bit of a reason to pull together. And I think that you're able to contain in a box, have an adventure like that, pull it out, have an adventure like that. It all goes back in the box, you can play it again. But it still wasn't like, it's not like an infinite play thing, because there were only
five campaigns.
Yeah, there's five campaigns. There's only so many sheets in the box. I think if you played it you have to play it three player. Like maybe you could replay some campaigns and have enough.
Yeah, and that's actually
sheets,
a game. That game was gifted to us actually by a friend. One of my coworkers, brother designed the game, and I still mean to be sending him. You know what? I'm going to send him a link to this. I'm going to send him a link to this podcast episode and say, "Hey, we talked about your game."
Yeah, yeah. It for not being my thing, and I think that shows even more how positive the experience was. You can't deny how well it was done. The artwork was like,
yeah, it was very good.
Everything about the experience was really consistent and really well done. And I think I didn't know what we were opening. And the last time I played something that was a Crossroads game, I'm pretty sure Dead of Winter is a Crossroads game.
Yeah.
And I thought that's more of what we were about to do. And I'm glad that wasn't it.
Right.
But I don't know that, because it's not two player, I don't know that we'll be,
I think if it were two player, we might play it more often.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
I was hoping there was a way to do it, but there are these things that come up for vote, I think. There were a couple gameplay elements about it that I was like, okay, yeah, you do need to have it.
I thought the voting was very fun.
And it would be, because the story, it took some time to get through, but it wasn't like crazy. Maybe it was like 3 hours start to finish.
Yeah, something like that.
So if you were going to have like a big game day with friends, if you're going to have a big get together, you could sit and plan to play through like half of it, probably, if not more.
Yeah.
If that's really what's your focus. Because once you have it all set up, I bet the next one goes pretty quick. Because we were still like, what's the website? What are we doing? So I'm sure the next one goes a little faster than that.
And we hadn't seen Jason for a while, so we famously talked for a long time before we started.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
not
I think
not famous.
That's,
people don't know that. I like to use famously wrong.
You sure do. I was going to gloss right over it. Uh-huh. And that's what storytelling games like that are more casual, I think, helps invite that. As do light board games. They kind of get you into maybe a little more interaction because the game or the activity itself isn't going to take you so far away or demand so much of you that you won't be able to, you know, take time out for that kind of connection.
So Kelly, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to next month going to Dice Tower West.
It's going
to
be delightful.
It is.
It's really next week, not just next month.
That is correct. It's really soon. It's only a couple days away as we record this. It is 5 days. We're really going more for four than five. We're kind of showing up on day one a little late. There are over 3,000 people in attendance, which is by far the smallest board game convention we've been to. Gen Con, they estimate it like 70,000 or so. We went to PAX U, which is probably half that, probably less than half that, even though they keep the numbers a little different, so it's hard to directly compare. And this will be 3,000. So this will now be a third or less. No, not a third, a tenth of the one before. So we went from Gen Con years in a row, half down to PAX U, and now way down to the point where it's more like, because we were talking about this, it's more like being in the open gaming section of one of those bigger conventions, but that's pretty much the whole convention, like being in the Gen Con library or the Hot Games room kind of put together. So yeah, there's over 3,000 gamers coming. Dice Tower West Library, you can view online. I think it's library.dicetowerwest.com. It has nearly 6,000 games. So there's like two distinct games per person attending that are there. And of course, like, you know, it doesn't all get checked out in the scope of a weekend. And certainly things are hotter than other things get checked out a lot. But I kind of opened to think like, oh, what games do they have? And then you see they have 6,000. It's like, I guess most of them, I guess, is the answer.
The answer, yeah.
It's going to be hard to, unless you're really trying to find something obscure. It kind of feels like, well, if I know the game, I bet it's there.
Yeah, I would imagine that that's accurate.
Yeah. So
it'd be really funny if they like on purpose didn't have like Catan. They're like, ah, screw it.
Like, you've played it. It takes place in Las Vegas at the Rio.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun.
It's gonna be the first time that we went to that we've gone to Vegas as well. So we have a couple recommendations on things to try outside of just the convention. And I don't know how much we will. I know you want to play in a poker tournament. Yeah. I don't know how much we will do the other things or not. It'd be nice to do something while we're there because it's a pretty far trip for us being Gen Con locals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We've heard about the pinball museum as well as, I can't remember what the other thing is, but it's like a sign, neon sign museum thing. So yeah, and probably just walk down, like see the strip, walk down the strip or be driven down the strip, something like that, just to kind of see what's up in Vegas. Because the Rio, I think, sits a bit off
the strip.
I don't know how far.
I think I'm going to try to make happen, in addition to playing a poker tournament, and this will count for my looking forward. Obviously, I'm looking forward to going to Dice Tower West in Las Vegas. First time I've been to Vegas. Mm-hmm. First time I've been to Dice Tower West. I think I'm going to attempt to find a social deduction game with other people besides you at some point during Dice Tower West. And I think I'm pretty excited about that. I think we could probably pull that off where you play.
What social deduction? Do you have?
Yeah, I don't care.
Okay.
Like we'll play, you know, one night as a werewolf is the one I'm the most familiar with, but like we can play other ones.
Right, right.
I'm sure I can be tough. Well, I feel like me and some strangers and then you with another stranger nearby playing a game that's much more liking to your liking.
I like solo games. I don't even need anybody. What was I going to say about that? Oh, I believe at conventions like this, it's more common, even though you'll see it a little bit at bigger ones, to have flags for your table that are like looking for players, teacher wanted, players wanted, some, maybe there's another one.
Students wanted.
I want to teach you a game. Yeah. So I think it would be possible. I think it's more possible at a convention like this because some people probably do just come and they look for what flags people have out and just, you know, wander in and sit down. Maybe even more so people who are looking for big group games that are like social deduction games.
Because it's hard to play those games otherwise.
Solo social deduction.
I mean,
I imagine something is out there for that. I imagine someone's come up with a variation, but
there's several well-known abnormal psychological conditions that might make those pretty fun for you.
That's not mine.
Is that how we're ending? Abnormal psychological conditions?
I think so.
Game of the month? February.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 139. Be sure to subscribe to know when new episodes drop. You can follow us on Instagram, X, and Twitch at Variant Hex. We have a website and a blog at varianthex.com, and you can email us at podcast@varianthex.com. I've been posting a little bit more on our social media, but I got swept away in renovations and daily life. But there's still some new things for you to check out there, and there'll be a lot more coming when we go to Dice Tower West in just a couple days. The next episode will almost certainly be about Dice Tower West, unless you're listening to these in reverse, in which case you have 138 more episodes headed your way, the next one being another Game of the Month episode, but for January 2024. And that's all for now. Thank you so much for spending your time with us today.